Hey, everyone, and welcome to the FC Yahoo podcast. I am your host, Shahan Ahmed, here in Playa Vista, beautiful, beautiful Playa Vista today, with Alex Baker.
Happy Friday, everybody. Well, that's when we're recording this. Friday. Well,
way to give it away, Alex.
Yeah.
And Joey Gallino.
I like for the listeners to think that they're not really know when we're recording and think we're stuck in like this kind of dimension where we always podcast.
I mean, yes, sure. Whatever that means, but I think that's some form of allusion to Infinity War, I'm guessing.
Oh, great film. Is that what we're going to talk about today?
No. But Joey is our superhero stan.
Yes.
And not just minor stan. This man is crazy about everything.
It was fantastic, let me put it that way.
Well, that's really all we wanted to know about that. So moving forward.
One word review.
Yeah, to the Champions League. Second legs of the semifinals coming up. And we have what a couple matches, obviously, Tuesday and Wednesday. We're going to start with Wednesday's game. Liverpool versus Roma. In Rome at the Olympico, where something crazy happened the second leg of the quarterfinals against Barcelona. And if that same thing happens, well, Roma would go through. It's kind of a weird one because Liverpool dominated the first leg, and they looked so much better until they took Mohamed Salah off the field and tried to, you know, lock it down. And then Edin Dzeko, a couple goals for Roma, and all of a sudden we're looking at what was a 5-0 turned into a 5-2, and a 3-goal advantage is plenty. Trust me, it is plenty. But this tie does not seem dead. It's still alive, barely, but it's still alive. And considering what Roma did in the quarterfinals against Barcelona, not, you know, some run-of-the-mill team, you would have to say that the Romans don't necessarily like their chances, but they're not afraid of what they're facing. So let's start with you, Alex. What do you think about how this tie is set up, and where do you think it's going?
Well, probably it's going to go with Liverpool coming out ahead, probably, but not 100%. Roma have certainly opened the door for the possibility with two away goals, and you could see it when the first goal went in that the coach really believed that this was the beginning of a turnaround. So this team has a lot of self-belief. What they did to Barcelona, I think they're very high on confidence. But as we were kind of talking before we started recording, I think Liverpool's probably a stronger team than Barcelona at the moment. Right now, if those two teams were to meet in the final, I would put my money on Liverpool. So I think Roma's got a pretty tough task. Liverpool is going to be without Oxlade-Chamberlain. Is that going to be a big factor? I don't know. I think Liverpool just needs to get one away goal, and they're pretty much home free unless they just get pasted, which it's unlikely to happen. Roma's just not that high scoring of a team. So while there definitely is a shot for Rome, you got to say Liverpool's like 80, 90% favored at least.
Yeah, and just a quick note on Ox. It's an awful injury. He's going to miss
out. It's a real shame.
Yeah, he's going to miss out on the World Cup, and he was going to be in that squad for sure, probably playing a decent major role, or at least some role with the team. And the one point I'll say about this, and the reason I wanted to bring that up, is all of Liverpool's goals came after Ox went off injured.
Mm-hmm.
So it shouldn't make a difference, so to speak, but he genuinely, if anyone who's been watching him since he came over to Anfield, he's been immense. He's kind of been Coutinho since Coutinho left. In many ways, he's taken on that burden of not being part of that front three of Mane, Firmino, and Salah, obviously, but being that supportive midfielder role that interlinks with all of them all the time. And his pace has been huge. So as much as they were able to do everything without him, and he's not necessarily the most crucial player, it will be a big loss for them, in my opinion. Joey, I want to hear your thoughts on this second leg.
Yeah, I think the mood of that match changed so quickly because we appreciated Liverpool's great play, especially Mo Salah. It was gorgeous to watch, and Anfield was completely on fire. And, you know, in the back of your mind, you're enjoying it in the moment, and then in the back of your mind, you're thinking, well, this kind of means that the tie is ultimately dead. You know, it looks like Liverpool's guaranteed to go to the final. Then the last 10 minutes happen, and even after that first goal that Dzeko hammered home, you're still kind of like, well, Liverpool's in good shape. That second, I think, you know, that you could hear the door crack open a little bit, because like you said, in the last round, Barcelona suffered the wrath of Roma needing a result at home. The difference there, I think, was that even though Roma lost the first leg 4-1, they actually didn't look that bad. I think that's a really unfair
scoreline. They had a couple
line.
Penalties There's... that were like denied that they should have had.
Yeah, I think they're much better than two that scoreline suggests.
Yeah. And, sure. and they were much better than the line suggests. This time there was no way around it. They got ripped to shreds for most of this match. And I think going to, you know, I've said this in discussing this match with other people so far, the, you know, Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool does they're one of the few teams in the world that kind of sets up the same way no matter where they go. Heavy metal, you know, high pressing, all that. They're going to do that no matter where they go. So attacking them openly, which Roma's going to have to do, is a dangerous proposition. And Mo Salah, being in the form he is, which I all think we all agree, he's the best player on the planet right now. And so you kind of figure he's going to get at least one goal. And like Alex said, that might be enough to see them through pretty comfortably. So the door is cracked open. I wouldn't necessarily expect a result given the way the match is going to set up. But again, you know, that match on Tuesday could have ended a lot differently, and we could have been a lot more, you know, there could have been zero suspense about it. Now there at least is a little suspense about the return fixture.
Yeah, I mean, Roma beat Barcelona 3-0 at home. If they beat Liverpool 3-0 at home, they go through.
Or 4-1 even, right?
Like, yeah, 4-1 would work as well because they got two away goals. But, you know, one thing I kind of wanted to talk about because it came up online plenty is you know, everybody calls him Mo Salah. It is Mo Salah, obviously, for short. But his name is Mohamed Salah, and he's playing against his former team, right? And so there's kind of an interesting thing happening every time he scored. Was he didn't celebrate. He would put his arms up, and then he would do the one thing that he does do. It's not really much of a celebration thing, but it's more he goes, bows down, and does the traditional Muslim prayer thing where
it's
he puts his
cool.
Yeah, it's, and even against Roma, he was still doing that because he does that after every goal. And so he was doing that after he scored in the semifinals. But the camera seemed to keep cutting away right when he was doing it.
Interesting.
It was one of those weird things where you were wondering, are they trying to not show that? But well, and so
this
like
is, this is a certain U.S. sports network that we're talking about, so I won't name them.
Well, the thing is,
they're carrying the World Cup this summer.
But I think that they get the international feed, so I don't think it would be something on purpose that they're doing as much as it would be the, you know, Champions League directors. But when you actually went to the Champions League, you know, Twitter page to try and, you know, poke a hole in some of the conspiracy stuff, when you went to their Twitter page after the match, they actually had a picture of Mo Salah full bend that you never saw on television, and that, you know, they were, you know, like basically giving him a hat tip and acknowledging that he does this after every game. Anyone who's watched any Liverpool matches this season knows he does this.
And he's done it a lot.
Yeah,
like 43 times now.
Yeah, he's scored plenty. But it was just kind of an interesting little caveat, and also just to highlight the fact that he is playing against his former club. And if anyone understands how dangerous Mo Salah is, it's Roma. Like Roma gets it. And sure, they more than got it this in the first leg, because I'm not saying that gives them
but
a leg up on
dude,
stopping
here's
them.
The thing with Salah. Are we in agreement that he's probably the leading candidate other than Messi or Ronaldo to win the next Ballon d'Or?
I think he's the leading candidate.
The leading
right
candidate
now,
anyway. But
everybody, yeah.
Where did it come from? Because we've been talking about who that guy would be for a couple of years now, and you're thinking, all right, it could be Neymar, or it could be Pogba. Mo Salah was not a name on anyone's lips to be the guy who would come along, and even at Roma, he was okay. He was not a world beater though.
He was good at Roma. He was good at Fiorentina, but everybody just said that's Syria. He's like he's doing well. He's having these little stints, and he didn't necessarily sustain it to the same level. I think you got to, you know, really give a lot of credit to Jurgen Klopp
because
he put him he put him in that spot where he really allowed him to blossom. And I mean, he's just playing to his strengths to such an extent that you genuinely, he's not being muzzled at all. He's being allowed to run free. And Firmino's been a perfect, you know, Firmino and Mane have been perfect for him. Ox has been great for him as well. But just all around, that team is so well built to highlight his strengths. You know, like situation does make such a big difference. And the perfect example is, Mo Salah at Chelsea. Did anyone ever see him at Chelsea? Nope. Yeah. Exactly. Because that was the opposite of this situation. This situation highlights all of his strengths. At Chelsea, he didn't exist. He could be sitting on the bench and doing nothing for Jose back then. But instead, he got some run. People saw, hey, this guy actually has a lot of talent. At first at Fiorentina, he was good at Fiorentina. He was really good. He had some incredible goals when he first got there. I was the only one watching, apparently.
I'll take your word for it. I haven't watched a lot of Fiorentina in the last few seasons, I'll admit. But another question, how long can Liverpool keep him, do you think?
I think he's here next year for sure.
Yeah.
I sort of get the sense, just personally, that unlike a guy who's maybe bought from like an academy or who's bought young by one of these, like, you know, I'm not ready to call, obviously Liverpool's not on the level of like Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich right now, but I, you know, he's kind of
hurting for money.
What's that? They're not hurting for money, but they're not on the level even in the Premier League of a recent Chelsea or City or something like that. But I feel like he's kind of had that experience at supposedly bigger clubs. And I think he's actually going to be around for a while. I think that the relationship with Klopp is that strong. I think Mane and Firmino, like you said, are perfect fits. And his ability to – and sometimes I think it's as simple as that. And I also think it's as simple – I see Roma fans on Twitter complaining he never finished like that for us. He's become a better finisher.
Oh, for sure.
And, I mean, sometimes it's just that simple. And when you combine that freedom with – the guys he's playing around and his manager and the fact that he's better now as a finisher and his touch and his just sense. You know, we were talking about like that second goal that he scored. It was a great ball by Firmino, played at the perfect time, but that touch and then that little chip, you know, the calm, cool, and collected way he went about that, you know, that's the sign of a guy who's maturing, and he's still only 25. So
yeah. And that first goal highlights just his incredible skill. They're just so different, those first and second goals, because that first goal, it was like left-footed, inch top perfect, left corner, in off the like upper V, basically, unstoppable shot. And you say, wow, that is just incredible finishing, like nothing you can do there. And the second goal is the keeper comes out, and you're sitting there going, well, maybe you shouldn't come out against Salah, because he just dinks it so perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, in the second leg, if you're Alisson, don't you possibly say, you know what, no matter what he does, I'm not coming out?
Yeah.
But then you think back to that first goal, and you're like, if I don't come out, it doesn't really matter. He can strike it. So it's one of those things. But, obviously his finishing has gotten better, and he's a better player individually. You know, it actually reminds me of Coutinho when he left Inter. Coutinho at Inter was sold for, like, peanuts. But if you actually watched him play, which I did, frankly, back in those early days, he had really good. He was really good on the ball, really good dribbler. His finishing just didn't have enough power behind it. And then when he came to Liverpool, you saw him get that looping shot, you know, that had a little bit of backspin on or a little top spin on it, and had that extra dip, which is now the Coutinho shot. Frankly, he's best known for that.
Totally, yeah.
And he didn't that had not yet developed. So you would see him do some of these mazy runs, and then he would get into like around the box, and he would take a shot. And Serie A, most underrated league when it comes to goalkeepers, because they really do have some giants in goal. They would just like laugh at his shot and just catch it every time. But he would get into those positions, and you saw some of the talent. I remember back in the day, this is, you know, 2010, 2011, having like back and forths with people who didn't rate Coutinho at all. And I was actually like, no, this guy's good. He just needs to like develop more power in his shot. Well, he did, and then he's now, the second most expensive player of all time?
Yeah.
So it worked out for Philippe.
And by the way, not to take a shot at him, but Liverpool sure don't seem to miss him at this moment, do they?
No, I don't think so.
We were all talking like, hey, that's going to be a big deal, and he's a really good player, obviously.
But you know what? As much as you say he obviously is an immensely talented player, and we've seen how he's even fitting in with Barcelona, of all the players that they had in that front 3/4, he was the most, you know, easily
expendable.
Yeah.
You
could... It's surprising, because I thought he was sort of like the cornerstone of all of it, but you're right.
It was, and it proved to be true, but even at the time, I remember saying that. I was like, you know, I wouldn't sell Mane right now. I wouldn't sell Salah by any means, but if you had to sell one of those three, because I don't think Firmino was necessarily going to go anywhere anyway at the time, but if you had to sell, you know, let's just say Salah versus if you had to sell Coutinho. At the time, I remember being like, No, you do not sell Salah no matter what anyone offers you. But you would sell Coutinho because if the money makes sense, you can still do everything you're trying to do this year mm-hmm. without Coutinho being there. And he'd been in and out of the lineup for the last couple of years, so you kind of had a better understanding of what you had without him.
Well, and I think his head had definitely turned by that point.
You know, his head had been turned for 2 years.
Yeah, he had sangria and tapas on his mind already.
You know, it will be one of those things that Barcelona fans, I'm sure, will think about forever, and they're right to, and the club should as well. But if he had gone in the summer, I think, you know, you're probably looking at a treble for Barca because that one extra player would have made a massive difference for them. I mean, they're already still on pace to go unbeaten in La Liga, easily won the Spanish Cup. They were into the final eight and frankly had a, you know, 3-goal lead on without Coutinho involved at all. If he wasn't cup tied, if he'd actually gone over before the start of the Champions League, you're probably looking at Barcelona in the semifinals, and that midfield looks way, way, way stronger even, and possibly, you know, you're really looking at potentially a treble, which now you're never really going to see, but, you know, he'll end up taking Indiesta's place, obviously, and next year Barcelona should be one heck of a team in Europe. But before we get there, and we will come back and touch on Andres, let's talk about the other second leg, Bayern Munich versus Real Madrid. So Real Madrid won 2-1 at the Allianz Arena and now goes back home to the Santiago Bernabeu and almost looks like they're going to go to the Champions League final again and potentially win 3 straight Champions League finals. Joey, just your thoughts in general on what the heck Real Madrid is doing. Zidane, first of all, before I even throw it to you, Zidane has not even been in the job for 3 full seasons, and he's potentially going to win 3 Champions Leagues, which is he would be tied with the most ever by any manager.
And this is his first job as a manager.
Yep. His first, senior team job. Like, I just, the glorious absurdity of all of this is just what I, you know, you could sit there and you could break down the film, pour over the tactics, talk about stuff like that all you want, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really make a lot of sense that they're this good this often. They snatch this many results. And part of it obviously has to do with the fact that they not only have arguably the greatest player of all time in Cristiano Ronaldo, but a ton of match winners off, you know, around him, even on the bench on a given day. What kind of luxury is it where you can leave Karim Benzema and Gareth Bale on the bench to start a Champions League semifinal match? Well, they have it. And it's not all just that they've bought some of these guys for really expensive sums. You know, Isco obviously was young player of the year before he made his move to Real Madrid and La Liga. But, you know, that's still a smart buy. You know, you buy low and now he's one of their best players. Asensio, they helped develop. Marcelo, they found at an early age. And I know he's getting a little older. But, you know, this is like a really smart, really well-run club. And I think that they play with this kind of like arrogant abandon where they know how good they are. And they don't think they're going to lose. And I think Zidane, in some ways, is a perfect manager to handle that because they know how good he was and he knows how good they can be. And he's really good at managing egos. And, you know, I know Bayern Munich had some really bad injury luck. Alaba hasn't been playing. Boateng went out early. Robin went out even earlier. And so that's not, you know, ideal by any means. But you still look all over the pitch. They've got incredible players, too. And, you know, the Allianz Arena is a cauldron for 99% of Europe. But, yeah, the boogeyman seems to be Real Madrid. And they were, again, with some just – they're so ruthless, man. That Marcelo finish on the volley with his left foot, that low, hard shot. And then Asensio and Lucas Vasquez playing that beautiful, like, interlink play. And Asensio finishing it off. Like, it's just – they, if you give them an inch, they will take a mile. And they don't necessarily – they're kind of breakneck at the back. Don't get me wrong. Alex has his famous Sergio Ramos corollary to add to that. But it's just they're so good and they're so confident and they just know that they're going to make up for whatever happens. And they know that if you give them space, they're going to punish you.
So one thing, you mentioned Lucas Vasquez. It was kind of a surprise. He went, as you mentioned, with Bale and Benzema on the bench and started Vasquez and Isco. Isco, who got hurt with shoulder injury and will actually not be playing in the second leg.
Mm-hmm.
Not that many people will notice because of how deep they are. But kind of wanted to harp on Vasquez because a lot of people may be surprised that Vasquez gets that start. Well, even over Asensio, frankly. Well, here's a stat for you. Only Lionel Messi, with 18, has more assists than Lucas Vasquez this season in all competitions among La Liga players.
Wow.
Like, Lucas Vázquez has been doing it. Like I said, he's not necessarily one of those guys that's been getting the starts when it comes to these type of games. So it was a little bit surprising. But in that goal, he proved why he was picked.
I thought he lost the plot twice. I thought he should have played the ball twice. And then, sure enough, he ends up playing the perfect ball. I mean, he's just amazing.
They are just so clinical. they're just one of those teams where you would not bet against them at all to, like, bungle this up. Now, that said, Danny Carvajal is also going to be out in the second leg.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually more of a noticeable, you know, you could say that will hurt them more than necessarily Isco being out because they just have so many resources there. Kind of looking ahead before we go to you, Alex, about that binary of the Sergio Ramos deal, I can just see it right now, right? You can see him, Mo Salah, on a run, and Sergio Ramos is like, red guard time.
Yep.
And it's going to happen because Salah is going to get behind. We almost saw it with Juan Jesus, or Juan Jesus, I should say, my home. I made my own error there. But Juan Jesus in that first leg, I mean, I was thinking he's going to get a second yellow at some point. Mo Salah, and then you add in Firmino and Mane, they just put you under so much pressure all the time as a back line that you end up, you know, you last-ditch tackles is kind of what you have to do, and you're probably not going to get them. You're not going to get the ball. So, but before we get ahead there, let's just go to the second leg. What do you see happening? Do you give Bayern much of a chance? And, I mean, Jupp Heynckes has some, yeah, he knows what he's doing generally, but it didn't seem like it worked in the first leg.
I do give Bayern a pretty decent chance, actually. You know, 2-1. I know Madrid's got two away goals, but I feel like Bayern were unlucky in that game. You know, obviously they had the injuries. We don't know if Robin's going to be back. Jupp Heynckes said he's doing very well. But
and
really
Boateng also was.
Boateng's out.
Yeah, but I'm just being those injuries.
No, exactly. That's unfortunate. Boateng will definitely be out. But Robin, I guess, had an MRI, but we don't know what it said, and they're being a little bit vague about it. But you know, Lewandowski, I think, was sort of uncharacteristically off his game a little bit at the first leg. So this one, I feel like it's, I don't want to say 50-50, but it's like 60-40. I think Bayern actually has pretty good shot. If any team could go to the Bernabeu and overturn a first leg, it's Bayern Munich. They could definitely do it because it's a club that it's just in the culture to go and do that. As you say, Jupp Heynckes knows what he's doing. So Don's been really good. He's been great in this competition, but you know, Jupp Heynckes has been winning this competition for decades.
So another underrated player and kind of one of the ties between these two clubs is Toni Kroos. Now, you know, Toni Kroos won the Champions League with Bayern,
mm-hmm.
and then he hopped over to Real Madrid, wins another couple of Champions Leagues, is one match away from going to his third straight Champions League.
Wow.
What's that?
I said wow.
Well, it is a wowing thing.
It's a pretty big
thing.
Wow. Yeah.
And then in between you go, oh, right, and he won the World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got some serious silverware. That's the, yeah. I think, going back to the second tie, though, or the return fixture, I think that, you know, it was just a round ago that Juve went there and went up 3-0, and were it not for a, I think personally, bogus penalty call, and Gigi Buffon being sent off.
Is that your heart or your head?
What's that?
Is that your heart or your head speaking?
Both. No, I mean, and so the point is, you know, Juve was within a whisper of doing this at the Bernabeu, and I think that this is actually more about Real Madrid than it is Bayern, because we all agree Bayern is really, really good. And yes, Alex, you're right. They were a little unfortunate to only have the one goal in the first leg. But Real Madrid just, man, when they coast hard. And I think that they're going to look at this in a certain respect and be like, we're going home. We're going to be in front of our home fans. We're just going to do this, kind of with the same attitude they had against Juventus. It would behoove them not to. It would behoove them, Zidane, to tell them, hey, look, that's what just happened recently. I'm sure he will, but I don't know if it's going to strike this particular set of stars. So I think there is a chance that Bayern goes there and gets a result, because remember, all they need is a 2-0. I mean, that's not.
But don't you think?
Yeah.
Don't you think that, like, that the decision to start Lucas Vázquez and Isco is going to kind of charge up Bale and Benzema if they get the start in the second leg?
You'd hope.
To be like, hey, we're not guaranteed a spot in the final unless we turn up. And let's say they have a bad second leg and Real still makes it through. why would Zidane pick them for the final?
Yeah.
So you're sitting there, and Bale didn't even start the final last year. Isco got the nod ahead of him. So when you're a player like Gareth Bale with that level of talent, do you really just want to be the guy who's playing La Liga matches on the weekend and then serving as a substitute?
I kind of wonder why Gareth Bale still wants to be there.
Well, I'm not sure he will be after this year.
Yeah.
That what you say is it's true. They'll be motivated, maybe those guys, to come off the bench and do something. But I don't know. This one, to me, I just think it's far from over. 2-1. I know that Real just got the away goals, but if Bayern scores a goal, if they score the first goal, it's just so on, and that won't—it's so possible for that to happen.
I'm not ruling them out at all either. And wouldn't it be perfect if it was James to?
That'd be sweet.
I'm not betting against Real Madrid in this competition until the referee blows the full time whistle and they are out of the competition.
Okay, well, before we get out of here, Joey, by Joey's request,
yes, very much so.
We're gonna touch on a little bit of Andres Iniesta and just kind of bid farewell to him as he's announced that he is leaving Europe, because he said he will not play in Europe because he never wants to play against Barcelona.
Aww.
So some of the subtlety that made Iniesta special is that he was kind of like the actual hardcore football fan's favorite player in many ways, because he's not the guy that would end up on the SportsCenter highlight reel. But when you're watching, you're mesmerized by everything he's doing.
Well, kind of like Pirlo is the same sort of guy. He's a soccer player's soccer fan's soccer player. If you you observe the game casually, you're like, who's the guy scoring goals? That's the guy I want. But if you watch the game a little deeper, then you cultivate an appreciation for an Iniesta or a Pirlo. So, as an MLS guy or just a soccer fan in this country, I would think the possibility of having him here for a season or two would just it's mouthwatering to be able to get to watch a guy that up close in and week out.
Any team, any league would be lucky to have him.
For sure.
And that's
it'll be a shame if he goes to China just because it's a league that no one really watches.
But those seem to be the reports, is that he's going to China.
Seems to be that way.
And Joey.
Anyway, Joey, we've totally hijacked you.
It was your idea to talk about this.
It's okay.
And for anyone who's listening, I did write a column about Iniesta.
Good column, yeah.
Thank you, both of you. I don't generally get the good columns, and most of them must be shite. I will censor that later.
I don't really read most of them, but I read this one.
But Joey, what do you want to remember about Iniesta's time in Europe? Because I mean, he will probably play on to the World Cup. He's more than likely. He's probably actually one of the starting 11 in the group stage anyway.
And possibly on a team that's among the
second
tier of favorites.
Yeah, they're second favorites behind Germany right now, or Brazil might be slightly ahead of them.
I think Germany and Brazil, and then maybe Spain is sitting there with France.
I think after the last international friendly round, they were zoomed to the top.
Yeah. I'm going to remember the accomplishment, and by that I don't just mean the trophies that he won, but how key and central figure he was with two of the most dominant, runs, you could say, for both club football and international football. Every year from 2000, listen to his 2008 through 2012. So maybe, entering his prime, not fully in his prime at the beginning, but then definitely there at the end. 2008 European champion, 2009 Champions League winner, 2010 World Cup winner, 2011 Champions League winner, and then 2012 European Championship winner. That's just ridiculous. And then he obviously won another Champions League with Barcelona, another two actually, because he was in the side for the 2005-2006 final. And it boggles my mind that he could have that kind of silverware. But then it doesn't when I look at how key he was to tiki-taka both at the club level and internationally, and how him and Xabi Alonso and Sergio Busquets and kind of that golden parallelogram, if you will, of a midfield just strangled possession and forced you to play on their terms. And a big part of it was Iniesta's versatility, both attacking and winning the ball back. He's one of the best players I've ever seen without the ball, which is very key, obviously, as we know. And just personally, on a personal note, the goal he scored to, no, I'm not doing this, Alex, I'm sorry, but the goal he scored to win the 2010
Damn
World
you.
Cup, I'm
Damn
not
you.
Doing it on purpose.
It's okay.
It's just one of the greatest, I didn't really have a dog in that fight. Both teams had never won it, so whoever would have won it would have been memorable. I like seeing historical firsts like that. I like seeing Portugal do it a couple summers ago at the Euros. But when he scored that goal, I mean, just the magnitude of that moment for his country, for himself, for the fans on that stage, it might be my favorite goal ever, frankly, in the World Cup, as you know, at least outside of U.S., certain U.S. goals. So seeing that and then seeing all that he did, both technically and, you know, in terms of tactics and stuff like that, how he fit in and how he kind of helped revolutionize things, and also just all the winning, he's kind of the greatest player we don't talk about as much as we should, if I can assign a random kind of arbitrary honor to him.
I mean, can we go ahead and unequivocally call Andres Iniesta the greatest Spanish player of all time?
I'm not going to. I think Xavi's slightly better.
He won more than Xavi did on the whole.
He did.
And I think this upcoming World Cup would definitely give him some separation if they were to win. It's really close.
Yeah.
But I will say, you know, even more than the Messi era of Barcelona, I think you can call this the Iniesta era, because, you know, we talk about Messi in that in 2005-2006 Champions League final, Messi didn't play.
He didn't play. Yep.
And Iniesta did. He came on and he played for the entire second half. But it was one of those things where Iniesta was already ingrained when Barcelona started on what is considered the Messi run. And Messi gets credit for some of those trophies early on when he was, you know, kind of a bit player coming into it. And obviously, Messi hit those highest of highest. But really, it was the Iniesta-Xavi era, and it continued on after Xavi left on. But, mm-hmm. And you could still call it the Iniesta era. And now I think it will continue on as just the Messi era. But it was kind of a marriage of those three in many ways, while mm-hmm. all the parts around them kind of changed. And you could include yeah. Busquets a little bit later. He came in when Pep kind of came in. But really, it started because, you know, Xavi had been there, but really it got to the next level and got to where Barcelona started winning. They won a couple trebles and really became this dominant force in a different light than they had been in the Ronaldinho years and previous to that, the Rivaldo years. It was a different beast, and Iniesta was genuinely quite, you know, literally on the pitch, a central figure in it.
I mean, to me, that's the great Barcelona, the one that the 2009 to 2011, that was the great team. Like, with all due respect to the Neymar,
no, Suarez,
that was a great attacking trio. But we've seen that kind of thing in football teams, you know, maybe not quite that level, but you see that. But that Messi, Iniesta, Xavi thing was something special. It was unique football. And I just think that there hasn't been a better team since that team.
Well, it was 2008, because as Joey mentioned, it started really when we realized that Barcelona was on this next level was at the 2008 European Championships when Spain took over Europe.
Yeah.
And then 2008-2009, Barcelona does the treble season. And then 2009-2010, they got bounced in the semifinals, the Champions League, but won everything else.
Mm-hmm.
That was the year when they, I believe that was the season when they only lost one match.
Yeah, I think so.
And it was insane. Like, they genuinely did not stop winning anything. And, oh, right, they won the World Cup that year. Spain did. So yeah. It was, you know, it was, and it was Xavi and Iniesta were the heart
were
and
the
soul
fulcrum.
Of it.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying, Joey. I do struggle at saying, you know, one versus two being better versus the other. And I think that's kind of always been the thing that's kind of been special about Iniesta and Xavi too, for that matter, is they're different types of players, but at the same time, they were so perfect together, because Xavi was that player that always controlled possession a little bit more, king of the back pass, people would sometimes joke about him. and Iniesta was the player who was just like slightly more forward thinking. So Xavi, when he found him, Iniesta would almost be that link up to with Messi and whoever was playing with him at the time.
And you know what else is great about those two is that they're wholly unencumbered by ego. You know, at this stage, a lot of big stars, we just got done talking about Real Madrid and how their stars have big egos. And, you know, often case, rightfully, that just Iniesta and Xavi, you won't meet more two humble superstars, you know. And that complete and utter lack of self-indulgence, I think, also helped them reach the heights they did.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, anyone who has not had a chance to watch Andres Iniesta for somehow, just watch
what
him.
What are you doing?
Watch him for the last five matches of La Liga, I think, are left. Just watch. I mean, it's really all there is to it. Just notice how the guy who's not the fastest, not the tallest, not the strongest, somehow still has the ability to just take over games.
Yeah.
As the great Ray Hudson put it, it's the last of the summer wine.
Well, can I interest you guys in one more greatest?
Oh, I thought you were going to interest us in wine. I was like, yes.
Yeah, I have. I just got a shipment the other day from Barbieri Wine Company up in Los Olivos. Shout out. Can I interest you in Andoni Zubizarreta as the greatest Spanish player of all time? Or the greatest name, at least?
Aduriz.
I'm liking the name.
I like Zubizarreta better.
I'm just saying Aduriz is the greatest Spanish player of all time because the man is like 40 and scoring goals.
Still pumping in goals.
I want to see who else is doing that. Anyway, we have definitely gone over. So for Joey Galino, for Alex Baker, this has been Shahan Ahmed. Thank you for listening to the FC Yahoo podcast. If you download us on iTunes, please take a moment to review us. It definitely helps other people find us. And any feedback you have, follow at FC Yahoo over on Twitter and facebook.com/FC Yahoo. Again, thanks for listening. Bye.